PD Stories is brought to you by Madison Reed. Get your new color kit when you use code PD Stories at madison-reed.com. By Upstart. Go to upstart.com/PD to find out how low your Upstart rate is. And by Best Fiends. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play.
This episode will include sensitive content. Please visit the show notes for more details and listen at your own discretion. Welcome to PD Stories. I'm Tom Morris Jr., crime reporter and DC Special Police Officer. And today, finally, we're going to talk about what a special police officer actually is with the guy who trained me. In the studio with us is Chief Christopher Bell, founder of Capital City Protective Services.
I really wanted to be able to get out there and touch the community more and make a difference.
We'll dig into the reality of policing in DC, the state of mass shootings and school shootings in the country.
The training that they actually go through is how to deal with an active assailant, because when you have an active shooter in school, you're dealing with so many different things that's going on.
How Chief Bell trains officers to protect students and some of the biggest issues in the community, from drugs to domestic violence.
I actually lost a cousin to the violence of the drug epidemic. It was really bad. I've seen it. I've experienced it firsthand.
Chief, we've known each other for a while.
Yes.
You actually trained me and helped me become certified to become a special police officer several years back.
Definitely.
Now, let's talk a little bit about what special police officers are. People have been asking me this ever since I came on Live PD and was first introduced as a special police officer. And they asked me on Twitter, Instagram, I explained. In a nutshell, I'll give an encapsulated definition.
Sure.
Basically, a special police officer is sworn in D.C., for example, sworn by a Metropolitan Police Department.
Correct. Yep.
Given police powers that are applicable to a specific jurisdiction within the city. It can be federal housing. It can be the Holocaust Museum. It can be a particular neighborhood or community. There are a lot of different places, because you simply don't have enough police officers on the city payroll to actually protect all the places that need law enforcement protection.
That's true.
And that's it in a nutshell, right?
That is in a nutshell. And you're right. There are not enough police officers. Metropolitan Police Department is really going through a huge shortage. You know, so
as are a lot of big departments.
They are. You know, in this day and age, really no one wants to be the police anymore because of the scrutiny of is going on in the news and the media.
Mm-hmm.
But as special police officers, we outnumber the police department. There's actually almost 17,000 special police officers in the District of Columbia.
Wow. I had no idea there were that many.
17,000 special police officers. It's a huge program that that is running. That program has been around since the 30s and 40s as a special police. They were called special patrolmen back then. But the special police, we are given our powers by Title 6A, Chapter 17. And what it enacts us to do is we serve at the mercy of the mayor. So we are a program that at any given time the mayor can deputize any special police officer, any special police department for their use. But we are limited to a geographical area. Generally, I think that has only happened one time in a case of emergency where the mayor actually deputized some special police officers to help patrol the city. But in a nutshell, our training, everything has to be on the same level as the Metropolitan Police Department by Title 6A. We carry the same equipment. It was the Law Enforcement Safety Act of 2008 finally allowed us to carry some automatic weapons. Prior to that, everyone was carrying 38 revolvers, because back then, I think MPD switched over to semi-automatics back in like 1989, 1990, somewhere around there.
Yeah, they went to the Glock.
Yeah, because I remember when my dad first came home, he was all excited.
I got more rounds.
Yeah. So, we finally were tasked with carrying a semi-automatic weapon. But by definition, a special police officer is a private law enforcement officer. And like, we have the same arrest authority as the Metropolitan Police Department. We can arrest for felonies.
Pursue dangerous felon outside of that defined jurisdiction.
Or make arrests for misdemeanors, issue.
Go to court. Testify.
Testify, everything. So we're pretty much able to do what we need to do as police officers in that geographical area.
And we go through refresher training as well.
Yes. All my officers go through quarterly training. All my armed officers have to qualify four times a year, above and beyond the minimum of one time a year that's set in standard.
Explain how you got into law enforcement in the very beginning.
Sure. My journey with law enforcement started as a child. My dad is a retired veteran in the Metropolitan Police Department. Mm-hmm. So that just that feeling of the law enforcement presence in the house, you know, mm-hmm. having a dad who was military veteran, police officer, you know, it was kind of one of those things where I was like, wow, I was always fascinated with the law enforcement aspect of it. Me, myself, I went on to military school, you know, where I'm serving as a cadet. I led the cadet security corps, everything. When I first got sent there, you know, as a kid.
So you did get sent there.
I did get sent there. I did get sent there. I can't even sugarcoat that. You know, as a kid, you know, you're going into high school, ninth grade year, you mm-hmm. know, it's a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. you know. And, of course, being a kid, I fell into the pressure. And my mm-hmm. dad was like, look, get your act together mm-hmm. or you're going to military school. So, needless to say, I ended up in military school. Uh-huh. But honestly, it was probably the most rewarding thing that mm-hmm. could have ever happened to me. I built some lifelong friendships that I have to this day, mm-hmm. you know,
and discipline.
Oh, yeah, the discipline part, man. Mm-hmm. We had some great guys, man. We had a couple of Navy SEALs. We had a couple guys who were on special forces in the Army, and they were tough on you, but they were like your second father figures, and they raised us to be the men that we are today. And after that, I went to the police academy at Anne Arundel Community College, and mm-hmm. that's what really jumped it off mm-hmm. On that public side. From there, you know, I just really felt that I wanted to really touch the community more.
We're going to pause the program for a moment to tell you about a sponsor of our show. For all the people out there who dye their hair, men, women, whoever, with Madison Reed, you can take coloring your hair at home to the next level. They offer really professional hair color delivered to your door, starting at $22. PD Stories listeners get 10% off plus free shipping on their first color kit with code PDSTORIES. Find your perfect shade at madison-reed.com. For decades, people have had two options for coloring their hair: outdated at-home color or the time and expense of a traditional salon. Many Madison Reed clients comment on how their new hair color has improved their lives. Women love the results. Gorgeous, shiny, multidimensional, healthy-looking hair. This is game-changing color you can do at home. The color is crafted by master colorists who blend nuances of light, dark, cool, and warm tones to create over 55 gorgeous, multidimensional shades. Find your perfect shade at madison-reed.com. PD Stories listeners get 10% off plus free shipping on their first color kit with code PDSTORIES. That's code PDSTORIES. From the creators of Cold Case Files and PD Stories comes the next great true crime podcast, I Survived. Each week, I Survived presents chilling first-person accounts from people who overcame deadly situations, allowing the survivors to describe the events as they unfolded and how they made it out alive. If you love true crime, you are going to love I Survived. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, PodcastOne.com, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcast app so you can get new episodes every week.
What was your rookie year like as a police officer?
Ooh. Rough.
Yeah?
I mean, you work all different shifts. Mm-hmm. You know, your sleep pattern is never the same mm-hmm. for probably the first 18 months, mm-hmm. you know, because that's when you're in your probationary period. So mm-hmm. When you are in your probationary period, man, it's like you have to touch every shift because you need to know. Even going on to being a special police officer when I first got into the game, you work every shift, mm-hmm. you know, because that's how you
nights.
Build.
I only work nights.
Really?
Always.
Oh, yeah. Man, I've worked every shift, man. Mm-hmm. Every single shift I worked. Some shifts I didn't even want to work, but mm-hmm. but you know I got drafted to work, but it was rewarding though. Mm-hmm. I mean, I learned a lot, things that I thought, you know, this was how you do it. You know, when you're with a veteran, you're like, okay, no, that's just TV. You mm-hmm. know, and we see so many things on TV, you know, from cops and mm-hmm. all these other, you know, crime dramas and things like mm-hmm. that. And we're expected that our job is going to be full of action every day. And sometimes it's just boring.
Yeah. Most days, nothing, unless you're in the hottest of the hottest
yeah,
of zones.
Yeah, yeah,
most
yeah.
days, nothing too over the top happens.
Right, right.
It's not like screenwriters are writing the next shootout.
Exactly,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
But in D.C., where was the first place you were assigned as a police officer in D.C.?
Oh, man, the first place I was ever assigned to was to the Frederick Douglass apartment community.
Mm-hmm. So that's in the southeast, right?
Yeah.
But people don't know the lay of Washington, D.C. The city's divided into four quadrants. Mm-hmm. The nation's capital is divided into northwest, southwest, southeast, and northeast.
Yep.
Each quadrant has different characteristics to it.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Northwest has more affluence as you go further uptown.
Correct.
Southeast is almost its own city in mm-hmm. a way across the Anacostia River, about 100,000 people.
Yeah.
The crime rate in Anacostia has typically been over 200% above the national
Correct.
Average and remains that
Correct.
Up to right now.
Correct.
In the Northeast, it's somewhere in certain neighborhoods about 175% above the national average.
True.
So we have some really tough neighborhoods, a lot of good people in those neighborhoods,
oh, yeah.
but a lot of bad actors in those neighborhoods.
That's true.
And so that's the first place you police.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, you have that good element along with the bad element. Mm-hmm. You know, and the stereotype of, oh, it's Southeast D.C., everyone is bad, that's far from the truth. I mean, you have a lot of great people yeah. in those areas. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of hardworking people and families, generations of families that have grown up in that area, you know, but just being a law enforcement officer in that area, you know, you really get to see all aspects of it, the good, the bad, the ugly, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm a Washingtonian. I was born and raised in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. I grew up on 1st and Seton Street off Rhode Island Avenue okay. on the northwest side. So I grew up in that area and in the time of the height of the crack epidemic.
In the 80s.
Yeah, in yeah. the 80s, you know. So really being around that, you know, I had a couple family members who were involved in the drug game. So it was, you know, just growing up and seeing that, and but also having that, like I said, that positive light to look towards.
Your
and
father,
my dad,
right,
you know, and
right.
my mom, you know, they, my dad especially, you know, he was adamant about pulling us out of D.C., mm-hmm. you know, because at that time, everything was just so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it was just the wild
yeah,
west in
I mean,
the 80s.
Murder rates were 400 mm-hmm. plus a year. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was insane. And mm-hmm. I actually lost a cousin, you know, to the violence of the drug epidemic. Mm-hmm. So it was really bad. I mean, it hit our family hard. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when I'm on patrol or, you know, having to deal with the public, I can almost sympathize to that because I've seen it. I've experienced it firsthand, you know, dealing with the family loss of someone who was, you know, involved in that life and things of that nature. So, I really have a broad outlook on both sides of everything.
When was the first time you actually saw a dead body in the line of duty?
Wow. We were on patrol and, you know, we seen a young lady running through the courtyard of the apartment complex and she screamed, "Officers, officer, officer, I need your help. I need your help." And we're, you know, we run over there. We trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. She takes us back to the front and a building is engulfed in flames.
Mm-hmm.
So first thing we did, we called a fire board, try to get them out there as fast as we could. Grab fire extinguishers, whatever mm-hmm. we could, but I mean, it was just too out of control by then. Whenever they got the apartment under control, and the flame put out, and the fire investigator went in there, they discovered a dead body. Come to find out, it was a domestic violence issue. The gentleman had killed his girlfriend, set the apartment on fire.
Mm.
I mean, and it was shocking to say the least. I mean, that's the first time I've ever mm-hmm. seen mm-hmm. you know a dead body in that condition,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
But from there, I mean, it kind of became routine. You almost become desensitized to it. You almost have to sometimes.
You put it in perspective. You put it in perspective so you can emotionally cope with it and accept it as the reality of what comes with policing.
Correct.
I believe you told me once that during your first arrest, you were punched in the
yeah.
what happened?
Oh, man. So we had a guy and he was just hyped up. And I was actually with my field training officer.
Uh-huh.
And being a young gunner, you know, I'm young. I'm ready to get out there and make an arrest. And he's looking at me. He's like, okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, go ahead, take the arrest.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I run over and I'm getting ready to put the guy in cuffs. Next thing I know, he swings around and he clocks me one good time, man.
And you're a big guy now, and you were a big guy then.
Yeah, well, you know, I was a lot yeah. smaller
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, but I'm 6'3". I was probably about about 280, almost 300 pounds, you know, mm-hmm. just playing football and all mm-hmm. sports mm-hmm. and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he clocked me one good time, man, and it kind of rung my bell, you know. It kind of brought me back to reality, like, okay, take your time on this one.
Yeah, everybody's not going peacefully.
No. and that's one thing, man, we teach in even in the training classes now. Mm-hmm. If you think that, you know, just because you say turn around, put your hands behind your back, that they're going to go peacefully, it's not going to happen at all. So, yeah, man, that was an experience right there.
Well, we've got some hardcore people in D.C.
Oh,
we really do.
Oh,
D.C. and Baltimore and Philly.
Yeah.
All three of those cities have some really difficult neighborhoods. And we had a dice game that was shot up, and there were 54 shell casings at the scene. This is a broad daylight afternoon dice game.
Wow.
And there were 54 shell casings at the scene from four or five different weapons. So
wow.
That gives you an idea how many people who were strapped at the dice game.
Oh, yeah.
And one person died. You have things that go on here in this city, like PCP, for example.
Oh, man, that's a huge problem.
It's been a problem in D.C. as long as I can remember, going back to the 1970s, mm-hmm. that for some reason, PCP has been a drug of choice for a certain small percentage of mm-hmm. the population
yep.
here.
Yep.
And I've dealt with them as a SPO when, you know, a lot of times it's not a fight with them. It's
right.
just that they get high and you yeah. have to try to deal with that. Have you dealt with some of the PCP?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Plenty of them. You know, just it's been a few times. A couple of instances in particular, we were contracted to a property mm-hmm. right down the street from the police academy.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, when I tell you, it seemed like that whole summer, that's all we dealt with.
Was PCP.
Was PCP.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just...
Did you have to fight any people?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And when I tell you...
Tell us what it's like.
It's like fighting 10 men. It really is. Because they feel no pain. You know, the effects of the PCP is so psychedelic, they just really have no sense of reality. Mm-hmm. You know, and... just dealing with them, I mean, you're using all the tools on your belt. You're using your OC. You're using your baton. You know, you're trying to subdue them and handcuff them. It just nothing is working. Even baton strikes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and teaching the baton strikes, you know, to your lower extremities and your green and yellow areas, soft tissue and hard cartilage. It seems like it doesn't affect them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just does not affect them. But once they come out of it, yeah, they know they've been in a little scuffle because everything now, all of a sudden, just comes back to normal now.
Yeah, once the drug wears
once
off,
the drug wears
and then
off,
the pain.
Yeah.
It
your pain receptors come in,
real.
Yeah. And it's, when I tell you, man, it's no easy task.
No, there was a time, the big mental hospital here in D.C. for many, many generations was St. Elizabeth's in Southeast.
Yeah.
That's where John Hinckley, who shot President Reagan, spent
right.
over 20 years in St. Elizabeth.
Yeah.
But St. Elizabeth's was full of a lot of people that were there simply because of the effects of PCP
mm-hmm.
for several
mm-hmm.
decades. They were the majority.
Correct.
Of the patients.
Because it has that thing, it just fries your brain,
mm-hmm.
you know, to the point where you smoked it so much, you know, you don't know what is reality and what is non-reality at that
mm-hmm.
point in time. You know, you're hallucinating, you know, it brings on effects of schizophrenia,
mm-hmm.
you know, paranormal. It brings on so many different things that people don't realize, you know, the consequences behind using this drug. You know,
mm-hmm.
And we see that in our communities, and even mainly in the African American communities, we
mm-hmm.
see that, you know,
mm-hmm.
a heavy concentration of the drug use,
mm-hmm.
The PCP, the heroin.
Here in D.C.
Yeah, here in D.C.
Oh, mm-hmm.
You know, it's really bad, man. It's
mm-hmm.
it's really bad. I mean, and it's really starting to become a bigger thing now because the drug epidemic is really starting to come back now. And that's really, and it's more over
the opioid epidemic.
The opioid, yeah. It's really more opioids and prescription pills and things of that, yeah.
We'll get back to PD stories right after this break. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Hurry to Upstart.com/PD to find out how low your Upstart rate is. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept your rate. Once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is top-ranked in their category with a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/PD to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/PD.
Obviously, the war on drugs has been going on since the 70s. Correct, obviously, correct. The war is not anywhere near being won.
Correct.
Do you have any perspectives on it?
I really think that with the opioid epidemic, it really boils down to accountability and where they're actually getting the drugs from.
Which is pharmaceutical companies.
And doctors. Yeah. You know, it really becomes a thing where people go and we all know being a doctor or being a pharmaceutical company is a big business. It's a billion-dollar business. So you have doctors and you have companies who are just stroking a pen just for the sake of receiving a check, mm-hmm. not knowing the detriment that it's causing to the communities.
And in now knowing
yeah.
and still
and
the pills
still
continue
it.
To flow.
Yeah.
The lawsuits are now in place
Correct.
For some of these pharmaceutical companies. Some are being held accountable, but mm-hmm. the pills are still flowing. They are now prescribing opioids to young children
yeah.
for pain
yeah.
in this country.
Yeah.
And
just holding those doctors, holding those pharmaceutical companies accountable for what's going on. That's where it starts at. You know, if you slap a couple people with some felonies and some multi-million-dollar lawsuits—
mm-hmm.
I think things will start making a change when you affect people's pockets and you affect people's freedom, you start seeing things change.
As an African-American officer, police officer, have you received any personal backlash? I know that I've had people that would walk up to me and mm-hmm. tell mm-hmm. their children, don't talk to me because I'm in uniform. Don't talk
yeah.
to him. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like
yeah.
the kid's 4 years old. Don't
yep.
you? Why are you talking to him? You know, little girl trying to show me a firefly at night that
right.
she caught. And her mother just runs up and grabs her and says, don't talk to him.
Yeah, I've actually had that happen to me before. I've had that happen to me before. We were patrolling, and a young guy said, hi, Mr. Police, hi. And his mom literally grabs him and said, don't talk to him. He's the bad guy. And I'm looking at her. I'm like, do you realize what you're telling your son? You're telling your son I'm the bad guy, and I'm here to help you. So if you're having, if you're having an emergency.
Who are you going to call?
What are you going to do? Because he's going to look at us as, oh, no, I'm not going to call them because they're the bad guys. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a shame, man. But, as an African-American officer, man, you do kind of receive some of that backlash because especially working in predominantly African-American neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're looking at you like, well, man, you're supposed to be helping me out. You know, mm-hmm. we're the same. You know, we're black. But I'm looking at them. I'm saying we have a job to do. We have laws, rules, and regulations to enforce.
Mm-hmm.
If you break it, I'm going to do my job. No matter what race, what creed, religion, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
We have a job to do, you know, and we do receive backlash for it.
Mm-hmm.
Even neighborhoods that I've worked that have had, you know, Caucasians, white folks in them, and I've been called the N-word a couple of times.
Really?
Yeah.
Here in D.C.?
Yeah, here in D.C.
Here in the Chocolate City?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's crazy, man. It's crazy. And I just sit back. I mean, the first time it happens, it kind of catches you off guard,
mm-hmm.
you know. But after that, it's just like, what can you do about it, you know?
Yeah. And have you been in any
yes.
gunfire incidents?
Yes, a couple. There was a family who was known for selling drugs out of the apartments.
Mm-hmm.
We actually were key in getting the family arrested because, you know, just— through surveillance and things like that. Next thing you know, once the family is arrested, a couple of the family members come back at nighttime, and they were ready.
Uh-huh.
They
ready for y'all.
Oh, they were ready for us. So uh-huh. We were in the courtyard, we were doing our patrol. Next thing we see a couple of guys run behind a building. Yeah, we kind of paid attention to it, but didn't pay attention to it. You know, I'm kind of mm-hmm. looking out the corner of my eye. Next thing I know, guy steps out in the courtyard and just starts shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tell you it's something to make you pucker up real quick,
mm-hmm.
especially when you start hearing bullets whiz mm-hmm. by your head,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to take cover, you know, and a lot of folks don't realize it. You will revert back to your training. Mm-hmm. You cannot freeze up. You have to revert back to your training. Mm-hmm. And that's why I push training so hard. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, you know, mm-hmm. we push training hard, man. And because you just never know when you will find yourself in a situation where you have to defend yourself and someone else around you. Mm-hmm. You know, the name of the game is going home at night mm-hmm. and going home the same way that you came to work.
In one piece.
In one piece, mm-hmm. you know, with all the holes that God gave me originally, you know.
So how did this go? How did it all go down? When the bullets started flying?
We went and took cover into the building. And like I tell people, you never know how you'll react mm-hmm. to something until it actually happens. Mm-hmm. So we took cover. We fired a couple rounds off at the individual. Mm-hmm. One individual was hit, but he fled away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, by then MPD had came from everywhere. I mean, it was just a swarm at that point in time. But, you know, when you're dealing with something like that, it really is eye opening, man, because mm-hmm. back then we were carrying 38s. So it was crazy.
And they weren't.
No.
And they weren't.
Not
they were
at all.
They were already carrying semi-automatics.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
But it's no joke, man. I mean, there's some tough neighborhoods.
Yeah,
and one
is.
Of the problems we have here in DC is so many people don't come forward, and the don't snitch thing is a very huge thing
it
here
is.
In DC.
It is.
And so
it
we is. Have a lot of people that have, over the last 30 years, gotten away with murder.
Oh, yeah.
I remember one case in particular where there was a guy in a neighborhood in Southeast who got killed. And after he was killed, people in the neighborhood started telling the police about all the people he had killed.
Oh, wow.
And it was, I believe, 4 homicides were eventually attributed to him from tips from the community after
wow.
this guy got killed. But had people come forward after he killed his first victim
right.
and said, this is the guy that murdered so-and-so.
He could have prevented the second,
3
third,
other families
yeah.
would not have had to go through this
exactly.
at the hand of this particular perpetrator.
Exactly, yeah.
And the other thing is, a lot of those individuals get shot multiple times in separate incidents mm-hmm. over their criminal careers
yep.
and don't die.
Yeah.
They just run up incredible medical trauma center
oh,
bills.
Yeah.
There was one guy, that was a news story done on here, had been shot 9 separate times in the course of his criminal career in D.C.
Wow.
And was still out on the streets committing crimes.
Yeah, I've actually ran across a guy, man, and he, man, you know, Bill, man, you know, I've been out here in these streets, man, since the 80s, man. I've been out here. I'm like, well, when are you going to retire?
Right.
Know? And I'm like, dude, you know, is it taking a time? Man, I've been shot like 6 times, man. I'm like, and you still walking around the street? No. You know, at what point do you get tired of being shot? You know, it's only going to take but that one bullet, you know.
No, but that's how some people are living.
They
you
are,
know?
Man. It's a shame. I had a brief stint as a police officer at Washington Hospital Center.
Mm-hmm.
Very rewarding career. Mm-hmm. Had some great leadership there.
Another challenging place to be a police officer, though.
Yes, yes.
The emergency room there
Ooh, man.
Is a challenging environment.
Yes, it is. Just to speak on that for a quick second, mm-hmm. I mean, working at Washington Hospital Center, man, it really is another level of law enforcement
mm-hmm.
because you're dealing with not only the patients, but you're dealing with visitors, you're dealing with everything.
Family and, members who are angry,
yeah,
upset because
yes.
someone's being brought in who just got shot.
Yes, yes.
People come in, want revenge.
Yeah, it is the number one level one trauma center in the Washington metropolitan area,
mm-hmm.
you know, and once DC General closed down,
mm-hmm.
prisoners, you know, gunshot victims, everybody was coming to Washington Hospital Center. So, like you said, in the ER, you know, in intensive care units after people have been shot and, you know, they end up passing away. I mean, it was crazy, you know. But it was a enriching experience because that was another level of law enforcement I did get to learn. Mm-hmm. And I had great FTOs. I had great leadership there. Mm-hmm. You know, we blended. And actually, the chief of police who was there, his name is Lawrence Harrington, and he's actually a reserve captain with the
mm-hmm.
Metropolitan Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
He actually is my COO and my chief of police, well, our deputy chief of police with Capital City now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of like paying it forward.
When did you get into Capital City Protective Services? Did you found the company?
I did.
You founded the company?
Yep, okay. I founded the company. It was a dream and an idea back in 2011, mm-hmm. And it really came to manifest in 2012. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, I really wanted to be able to get out there and touch the community more and make a difference, but I wanted to make the difference at my pace and with me in charge. Mm-hmm. So me and my wife, Armenta, we founded the company, and we started off with one contract. We had a contract on New York Avenue.
That was a notorious place.
Oh, yes.
For those who don't know, that's New York Avenue, where you're coming off the interstate into D.C., and there's a stretch there. It's changed some now.
It has.
But
it has.
Back when you're talking about those motels were hotbeds of prostitution, yep. drug dealing, and so forth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we that was our first contract, and we had one officer there. And I was actually still working, a part-time job, mm-hmm. During the course of starting a company. You know, you're jumping out there, you're starting a new company, you're mm-hmm. working with your savings, but you still got to take care of home, too, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So we started the company, and we have grown to the point where we have 145 officers. Last time we did payroll, 145 mm-hmm. officers. We are in 6 states now. Mm-hmm. So we have grown tremendously from 2012 until now.
We're going to take a quick pause so I can tell you about a game I'm really having fun with right now. It's a puzzle game called Best Fiends. You have so many new levels to unlock, and getting to the next one is a thrill. And the game challenges you. Every level brings a harder puzzle to crack and gets more fun each time. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. It feels like endless entertainment. And it doesn't require internet to play, so it's great for traveling, which I do a lot of. You can play anywhere, planes, buses, trains, you name it. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can even play offline. With over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Now, I understand that you've branched off into Broward County, Florida.
Yes.
Since the Parkland shooting at the high school, Florida has instituted some new security requirements for those schools.
That's
where
correct.
They need armed officers in the schools in Broward County.
That's correct.
And your organization actually providing some of those offices.
That's correct. We are. Florida enacted a law called the Guardian Law. And this was, like you said, based off the Parkland shooting. Mm-hmm. So what they require from the individual security companies, that they send their officers through training with either the local sheriff's department, mm-hmm. which certifies them as guardians. Mm-hmm. From there, they are certified, and then you are able to place them in the schools at that point in time. Mm-hmm. So we are servicing 3 schools right now, plus we have another 2 that are coming on board before the end of the year with our certified officers. So we provide in those areas HOAs, condominiums, different things, especially the schools. The schools is big down there because, I mean, back when we were in school, we never thought about having
getting
to deal with an active shooter going to school.
No.
I mean, the biggest thing that you worried about was
a fist fight after school.
There you go. And what's for lunch? That's about it.
And what's for lunch?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the mystery meat. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a shame, but, you know, it's the way our world is nowadays, man. Mm-hmm. It really is. Our main focus is more keeping the kids safe than anything else.
Is there different training that your officers have to undergo for that specific police assignment?
There are. The training is done by the local sheriff's department, and the training that they actually go through is how to deal with an active assailant.
Active shooter.
Mm-hmm. That is their main focus on dealing with that. The focus is how to remain calm in a situation like that, knowing your background just in case there is an active shooter in there. Because when you have an active shooter in school, you're dealing with so many different things that's going on. Kids and, you know, teachers are running.
Droves of people running in
just
different
running
directions.
Everywhere. So you have to be able to have that steady nerve about you and the training to actually deal with all the chaos that's going around you, but being able to protect the folks that you're there to protect, the kids and the staff.
and try to stop the threat if that opportunity is available to you.
Correct. And that is one of the biggest things that you have to go through in the training. And the training is called Guardian training. So they put you through a lot of firearms training. They put you through a lot of simulator and judgmental training.
Right. Shoot, don't shoot
mm-hmm. training. It's intensive. It's intensive. And my hat goes off to the Broward County Sheriff's Department and their sheriff down there for running an amazing Guardian program, even the neighboring county, Polk County. Great leadership in Polk County and Broward County that I think they are amazing when it comes to this training, and they're at the forefront of it, you know, and being a trainer myself, you know, my hat goes off to all the trainers that are involved in this cycle of training for, you know, the school security.
You've trained hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of special police officers, including myself, and you've had some that have been involved in shootings.
Yeah.
You had one not too long ago, right?
That's true.
Tell us about that.
So one of my officers was involved in a shooting, and this happened on Easter morning of all days. She was actually, her sister had came to drop off some money for her for lunch, and they were sitting in the car talking for a brief second. And this gentleman had attempted to rob someone at the McDonald's right on Minnesota Avenue. So when that failed, he ran over to the shopping center and attempted to carjack the two young ladies, not knowing that one of them was an armed special police officer.
Because her uniform was covered up.
Because her uniform was covered up.
Because we're supposed to cover your uniforms up, even MPD. When you're not working, you're supposed to cover your uniform.
Yep.
Or else take it off.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. Because if you don't, it's a violation of Title 6A.
Exactly.
Which gives us our police powers. Mm-hmm. So he attempts to carjack them. He doesn't realize that she's a special police officer until they're getting out the vehicle. Now, he has the weapon to the sister's head. The officer comes out the car, and she's actually a part of our SRT team. And for those who don't know what an SRT team is, a special response team. Mm-hmm. That we have officers who have the above the normal training mm-hmm. and specialized training. And mm-hmm. We had two teams of six, mm-hmm. And our training was done by couple of members of Prince George's County SWAT team. And her training just kicked in. Mm-hmm.
He's got a gun to her sister's head.
He's got a gun to the sister's head. And she comes out the car. She takes cover. By the time he realizes what's going on, she's already taken off her jacket and activated her body camera.
She had the presence of mind to do that.
Just by training.
Uh-huh.
Took her jacket off, activated her body camera, and in that split second, he saw her and fired a round off just as close as me and you are across the car.
Where the sister's in between them.
Where the system's in between them. By the grace of God, no one was hit. Mm-hmm. She drew her firearm and immediately fired two rounds at him. The sister was out the car. He jumped into the sister's car.
Mm-hmm.
Jumped into the sister's car.
Okay.
And began to take off. And he's shooting out the car the whole time. So this looked like something out the Wild Wild West.
Wow. This is in broad daylight.
This is in broad daylight. This happened around 9:30 in the morning.
On Easter Sunday.
And the next thing you know, and you can see it on body cam because we had the body cam footage, mm-hmm. and she takes cover, fires two rounds off as mm-hmm. he's driving away, and whole time she's just in cover, scanning. You can see her.
And use trigger restraint because you're in a shopping center. A lot of officers in that situation would have emptied their mags. She's probably carrying a Glock 17.
Yes, Smith & Wesson MMP.
MMP. Yep. So she's got, 15 rounds on deck?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And a lot of officers would have emptied their magazine at that fleeing vehicle.
Yep.
But she used trigger restraint and good target discipline.
Yes. That's the biggest thing that we train on.
Mm-hmm.
Know your background. Know what's in your background, because if you do miss, and it is a very high probability that you may miss, I mean, you're shooting at a moving target.
Mm-hmm.
You want to not hit something else that's in the background.
And an innocent person.
Oh, yeah. Because mm-hmm. you are liable for every round that comes out of that weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So during the altercation, you on body cam, you can see she did all her scans right, trigger discipline. You know, mm-hmm. she's staying calm. And it wasn't until after the whole thing, MPD actually caught the guy because he actually crashed the sister's car a little bit down the road. And MPD actually ended up catching him.
So he was captured.
He was definitely captured. Okay. And it wasn't until she arrived on scene with MPD and identified him mm-hmm. that she broke down. The whole time, she stayed calm, she stayed alert, and did everything textbook. And when
MPD, and then it all sinks in.
Then it all sinks in.
And that's when the emotions and
the adrenaline, everything. Mm-hmm. And when we went through for the investigation, MPD said, man, this was textbook. Mm-hmm. They were like, we haven't seen anything like this in a long time, and it's textbook.
And she's back on the job.
And she's back on the job, and she's good to go. You know, it took a little time for her to get herself together, but I mean, that's to be expected, mm-hmm. you know, and that was actually the first shootout she's ever been in. Mm-hmm. So, but for her to be in a situation like that, you know, she handled herself like a trooper. She did.
Now, in the community you serve, what's the biggest issue that you're seeing today? And feedback you get from your officers mm-hmm. that are spread around the city and around these six states, mm-hmm. what's the feedback? What are the biggest problems that your officers encounter that they come to you with?
You know, to be honest, Tom, it's a mix of things. But I think one of the biggest things that really a lot of our officers are seeing is the domestic violence part of it. The domestic violence part has become a huge, huge problem in a lot of the patrol areas they patrol. It has increased over the years, you know, and I attribute it to some just not being taught how to treat their significant other. And it's not always man
or their children.
Or their children. That's true. Child abuse is a big thing.
I encountered child abuse with a woman beating her child very badly.
Yeah.
And it was a whole new situation for me to have to deal with.
It is. And you know, when you come across something like that, you know, you're looking at it like, wow. You know, you hear about it, but mm-hmm. until you experience it, then mm-hmm. it's really it becomes sad sometimes, you know. And sometimes as officers, we don't want to desensitize ourselves to everything. And sometimes you see it and it's just like it really hits your heart, man. It pulls at your heartstrings, you know what I mean? And
it's not just men abusing women.
It's women.
It's
on
women
men.
Abusing men. Yeah. It's across the board, back
everything.
And forth.
It's everything, man. And, you know, it is a big problem. And like I've always told people, you know, the day and age of having grandparents, mm-hmm. real grandparents, you know what mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. who were in their 60s and 70s, you know, 80s, and taught you values.
The backup parents.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, taught you values, taught you mm-hmm. who to be nice to, who not to, you know, be respectful of your elders. You know, my grandparents are from the country. They're from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I was to ever disrespect a woman or mm-hmm. raise my hand to a woman, my grandfather had massive paws.
Oh,
we call them mittens.
Yeah. Yeah.
He would knock my head off, you know, because you just did not do that,
right.
you know. But now, you know, it's funny. I believe it was Bernie Mac who said it, you know. As a grandparent, you're 35, 40 years old now. you know,
yeah,
it's hard.
There's a lot of young grandparents out here.
There is, you know, and it's a shame, but you know, they're not teaching mm-hmm. the values that even maybe they've been taught.
Now, you do a lot in the community as well, Capital Cities. Tell us some of the activities that you do to try to help the community.
Sure. Sure. We definitely give back, man. That's at the end of the day. It's not about always just being that law enforcement presence in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a thing what's called community policing. Mm-hmm. My officers, at some point in time in the year, we make it mandatory that at least during the course of your tenure while you're at Capital City, you must participate in a community outreach event. Mm-hmm. Just about 2 weeks ago, right in that Anacostia area, we actually patrol the 7-Eleven that sits right there off Good Hope Road and 14th mm-hmm. Street. We went to the neighborhood park. A couple of my officials and some officers on there, after they have worked an 8-hour day, they came out. We brought out the big grill and we fed over 120 families.
Man. Wow, nice. Yeah,
we fed over 120 families. And it was just because. You mm-hmm. know, folks were like, oh, are you charging for this? No, we're mm-hmm. not. It's just because. You know, mm-hmm. we want to have shine that different light on policing. You mm-hmm. know, we don't want everybody to think, oh, you're just here to arrest me or, you know, shoot me or whatever. You know, it's not like that. We, for back to school, we donated close to 250 book bags and mm-hmm. school supplies and, you know, every year a couple of our officers dress up as elves and, you know, and Santa Claus and stuff like that. We go deliver.
You do Santa?
No, I don't do Santa.
You never did Santa?
No, no, no. I can fit the profile.
I think you would make a great Santa.
Man, I probably could fit the suit now, man. I've gained weight.
Everybody run. Santa Claus has got a gun. Okay.
I'm telling you, man.
Now, in closing, what advice would you give to any person that's interested in becoming a police officer, be it a municipal police officer or a special police officer?
The biggest thing I would tell someone is know what you're getting into. Make sure your heart's in it. Make sure you're in it for the right reason. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks get into it just for a paycheck, for a steady paycheck, and just for retirement. Mm-hmm. That's part of it that mm-hmm. comes along with it. Yes, you are supposed to be paid. Yes, you do have retirement benefits. But do something more than just go to work and retire. Mm-hmm. Change someone's life. Change the community that you're serving. Really know what you want to be a part of. Because at the end of the day, a lot of people look up to police officers, mm-hmm. regardless of the naysayers, regardless of the backlash that we see on the media. You know, being a police officer is a prestigious job, and do it to the best of your ability and have a rewarding, prosperous career. You know, like I said, I seen my dad.
And survive it.
Mm-hmm. And survive it. That's the most important thing, mm-hmm. survive it. You know, like I said, I seen my dad 30 years get up every morning, put on that uniform, strap that gun on, and go to work. And by the grace of God, every night he came home and he made it 32 years. So.
And provided a good living for
his family. And provided a great, you know, environment for his kids, you know. And like I said, it's a rewarding career, man. It's what you make of it.
It is. Chief Bell.
Hey.
Thank you for being
always
here.
Always a pleasure, Tom.
Always a pleasure.
Definitely.
That's going to do it for another episode of PD Stories. I'm Tom Morris Jr. Till next time. Peace.
Thank you for joining us today on PD Stories. If you enjoyed today's show, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. And like us on Facebook.com/PD Stories for more information. You can also catch me on A&E's Live PD every Friday and Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. PD Stories was created and executive produced by Sue Funk with producer Julie Magruder. Our editor is Steve Delamater. Special thanks to McKamey Lynn, Tisa Cassidy, Alicia Acuff, and the teams at A&E Networks and Podcast One for making this show possible. Until next time, I'm Tom Morris Jr.